It's been bad news on the mining front. On the one hand, mining production data for December declined by 4.8%, with gold and iron ore causing a drag. And then Sibanye-Stillwater announced that it needs to restructure its gold business as it's failing to make a profit. Some 6,000 jobs plus are threatened, unfortunately. Well, to chat about these issues, I'm joined on the line by Mamokgethi Molopiani. She's a Labour analyst. Thanks very much for joining us, Mamokgethi. The mining data is quite poor. What did you read into the data?
Good afternoon. Good evening. The mining industry is going through one of its toughest periods to date, and that obviously production is affected not only by what's happening internally in South Africa, but also what's happening outside in the global markets in terms of the demands, but also in terms of the geopolitical issues when you look at what's happening in China and the United States. But coming back at home, they probably are affected by the electricity that has been affecting most mining. We know that load shedding just doesn't start this week or last week, yes, but that it's been ongoing since November, since October, some would say even since much earlier than that. And then, of course, I'm not surprised that production in gold has dropped, given the ongoing dispute between labor, organized labor in mining, AMCU and Sibanye-Stillwater's. There has been a strike there that has been ongoing for almost a month during the period that is observed by states to say. So it's not surprising that there's a slowdown in gold production, really.
Yes, I hear what you're saying. And still on the issue of the gold sector in general, before we get into Sibanye-Stillwater, I mean, they reported during the period that they were negotiating salaries, they reported that up to 70% of the sector was not making a profit, suggesting that, the situation is quite dire for that sector.
Well, it would be understandable because, I mean, the cost that goes into of running the mines and electricity, by the way, the bulk of their cost is taken by the cost they pay for electricity and running the operations. I say this because their mining operations in the gold sectors are quite old. They've become expensive to run, expensive to manage, expensive to produce gold. So obviously that's bad. But to come out wholeheartedly and say all of them, I mean, they are not making profits. We know when we look at the year-on-year results of companies that there has been one or two gold mining companies that have done relatively okay-ish,
yes,
even though the industry is facing challenges. And that's the reality of their industry. You've heard the Minerals Council saying last year, I think for the past 4 months, even now, they've been saying, well, gold is not what it used to be. Gold mining in South Africa is not what it used to be. It is declining fast, and in the longer run, it won't be the biggest employer. It won't be employing as many people as it does now, but also there won't be so many gold mining activities.
Yeah. So Sibanye-Stillwater has issued that Section 189 notice to over 6,000 employees. It says there'll be a 60-day consultation process. What's your understanding about their reasons?
As we just highlighted, challenges in terms of the cost of operating old mine and old shafts, they've become expensive to operate, but also companies have been restructuring their operations. And, you know, I talk about this regularly, but with Sibanye, you'd remember that they've had their CEO has been with them maybe for, what, 4-5 years, and I think he's finally getting his plans in place and sorted, and so they are restructuring their operations. We know they've been moving towards acquiring other assets, and I think obviously they would let go of some of the assets they do not deem profitable. So not surprised that there is this notice of intention to retrench and that the consultation processes would take about 2 months. I expect them to be met with contention by AMCU, and I expect NUM equally, because this is NUM's stronghold, the gold sector, like the platinum sector, to not take this lying down, for lack of a better description. And so it's going to be interesting to see how Sibanye manages. It might actually be the uniting issue between the different unions that are currently fighting in the gold sector, if all of them are going to be impacted by possible retrenchments of 6,000 workers at Sibanye.
Yeah, I mean, you say they're not going to take it lying down, and that was my immediate feeling as well. But in reality, what is their recourse, especially if everything is done according, you know, to the law?
Not much, really, other than to argue that you cannot say the company employed. They'll position the argument to say the company cannot say it is retrenching people. The law in earning workers when its executives are deemed as still earning high and still getting bonuses and so forth from whatever production they have generated. However, it is the manner in which I think it's going to be the manner in which Sibanye rolls out the consultative processes. We know earlier this year, earlier in January, AMCU was adamant that Sibanye must verify the numbers of members it has as it's making inroads into that operation, so that eventually it can be known who is the majority union in that company. Obviously, the consultation process is going to have to factor that. How it handles that aspect will determine how the news are received. Even if the consultation would have been handled properly, I think it's about contention between the two unions. Who is the bigger union in that company, and who must be consulted first? It's going to be a hard time. I do not see for a moment it being an easy one because of the historical relationship between Sibanye Stillwater's CEO and the union AMCU itself, and the relationship between AMCU and NUM in that region.
Yeah. Mamokgethi, I mean, what do the rules or what does legislation say about what mining companies can and should do to make the transition for mine workers from having a job to no job, such that they're not totally left to the dust? Because it's quite noticeable that an ecosystem is created around a specific mine, and it seems as though it lynches onto nothing else. And then, of course, once people lose their jobs, it then has, you know, negative ripple effects across that ecosystem, that mini economy around the mine. So what is it that they're supposed to do to ensure that that doesn't happen?
Well, not much, really. There's not a very clear regulation that outright says this is what you must do as you're preparing to retrench workers. The labor law says you must consult with the workers, extensively state your case as the employer, not just in mining, by the way, state your case as the employer why you are retrenching, give evidence of why you cannot afford to carry any more people in terms of their salary. In other words, justify, make a case for your retrenchment in this consultation process with labor. Then once that has been done, you would have followed the rules, so to speak, of Labor Relations Act in terms of consulting workers. Then you can, and once an agreement obviously has been reached, or consensus has been reached rather, then the retrenchments can follow. But it doesn't really specify to say after you have retrenched workers or preparing the workers for life after retrenchment, this is what you must do. And that remains often the bigger challenges. I know the heads of divisions that are about employee relations often inform or engage workers to tell them once they are retrenched, they mustn't go and access all their retirement money, I mean their retrenchment packages, and spend it all at once. But that's as far as caring for the how the workers use their money. But besides that, not much.
Let's move away from the whole Sibanye Stillwater story and focus on what transpired at the Gloria mine in Mpumalanga. Some seven illegal mine workers were found dead underground. Of course, there was a rescue team deployed to try and search for some 22 people. They only found seven who are deceased. What's the responsibility of mining houses around illegal miners? Shouldn't they put structures in place such that people can't get underground?
Well, the responsibility, first of all, of the people who owned the shaft, who owned the mine that is closed, is to ensure that it is closed in such a way that people cannot get in. And this is where the DMR's Health and Safety Division comes in. This is where the DMR inspectors comes in to say who has ownership right or surface rights of the mine, who has been, who was given license to operate the shaft that has been closed. Did they follow, in their report for closing the shaft, did they follow the proper channels and proper procedure? Did they ensure that the closed area or the area that was mined is closed in such a way that people cannot go back into it? But of course, in reality, we know that illegal mining activity or informal mining activity, as it's called, will often happen whether mines have been closed properly or not, because it is a thriving industry that has at the far end of it those who are consuming and buying the goods from it. For as long as that, I think, persists, it's going to be hard to monitor it. I think this is where this DMR led by Minister Mantashe, its Health and Safety Division, this is where it must, I think, lead by example. There has been too many incidents of mine accidents, mine, whether legal or illegal, there has been too many incidents for us not to know, but for government not to know how to react, what to do, what measures to put in place to enforce that people who owned that place are held responsible, and what action to take. I think there has been far too many cases that we cannot say we are shocked by this, we are still studying this, we are shocked by what had happened. I think this calls, with this administration and this DMR, this calls for them to really come out clear about the actions that they're going to take. If they do not, I'm afraid it's going to be something that becomes a norm, a reality of South Africa, that people die in mines that are closed and that's it, and we just act shocked about it and that's it.
Mm. So what, do you think that mining houses should be penalised? I mean, at the end of the day, people go in there voluntarily. Like you say, it's a thriving business. People want to try and make some money. But, you know, they're almost trespassing on a mine. So it's a bit of a tricky situation.
It is. I mean, it's about who owned the place, who was given right to mine in the place that has been closed, and did they ensure that they closed it properly? Did they follow and in their report of why they are closing it to DMR, did they indicate areas that might be susceptible to being reopen again for illegal activity? Did they show or demonstrate that they've done everything in their power to prevent further reuse of it in an illegal manner or further operations of it? I think that comes down to that. The people who owned the place, in their exit report of closing the operations, if they still hold rights to that place, I think these are the people who should be answerable to. How did you close that, and did you ensure that there won't be activities around it? What measures did you put in place to ensure that there won't be activities around it? If not, did you raise the alarm that you cannot, because you're no longer mine there, you cannot afford or cannot ensure that it is guarded or protected in such a way that activity cannot take place? Did you raise that with the DMR as a way of alarm raising? And I think that is as critical as it is with the Health and Safety Division of DMR to go in and say it's about safety, because it's hard to control it when it is not in a formalized environment.
Yes.
Where inspectors can go into the operations, can go with the shift manager, can go with the mine manager and discuss it. When it is in an informal illegal activity, it is hard to enforce rules.
Absolutely. Mamogeti, thank you very much. It's always a pleasure talking to you. That was Mamogeti Molopiane. She's a labor analyst.